My name is Chris Main, M-A-I-N, and I'm with Colonel William H. McMurray, OBEMCED. And the date today is 8 June, 1979, and we are in Victoria. And last time we got about as far as 1916. I was wondering if you could relate the story you're telling me about your chum, Norton. You were commissioned. You've just been commissioned, Lieutenant.
Yes.
And your friend Norton went to one brigade and you went to the other. What was the circumstances there, sir?
We were commissioned from the 3rd Infantry Brigade, where we were sergeants. And I, being the senior of the two, was given the choice which brigade I would go to. And I chose to go to the 1st Canadian Infantry Brigade. And Norton, he took the 2nd Infantry Brigade. There was 2 vacancies there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that. And
now, where was the 1st at this time? On the Somme as well as the 2nd, or do you recall? This would be 1916.
Well, we were stationed, first of all, in Albert.
Mm-hmm.
That was where you rested when you came out of the trenches. Well, we came from way back to spend the night there and then go in the trenches in daytime. And we would be in each tour for 6 days, make an attack, and consolidate and leave. In those days, it wasn't just as simple as that, because very, very often we were kicked out by a counterattack.
Mm-hmm.
And so on, but that was just...
Well, what happened to Norton now? He was killed or something?
Well, he had come in. I had been in the trenches twice with my brigade. And for some reason or other, they laid a week before having us relieved. And a few days later, less than 2 days later, while we were at a rest billet, a motor car came to pick me up with an order from the commanding officer of the division signals, return immediately to the 2nd Brigade.
Mm-hmm.
And recover the body of Lieutenant Norton, killed in action, and remain in command until relieved. Well, that meant that I had to wait until my own brigade came in, and then I just simply squat there. Meant 6 weeks with no relief at all.
With the 2nd Brigade.
Yes, as back to my own brigade then, do you see?
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Now, this would be on the Somme itself, is that correct?
That's on the Somme itself, yes.
What was it like on the Somme in 1916? Do you have any recollections at all, sir?
Oh, yes. It was, I think, the grimmest thing of all. It was wasteful in lives and was ineffective in advancing into enemy lines. because 9 cases out of 10 for months. It wasn't possible to hang on to your objective. They would, if not the same day, then maybe the same night, or the following day, the Germans would be evacuating you from that line.
From the line. What were the physical conditions like, Bill? What was it, a lot of mud, or what was it like, the physical ground?
It was all right then. You see, that was a... Well, here we've got it here. That was September.
Must be September.
Yes.
Well, hadn't the bombardments chewed up the ground quite a bit, or is that coming later? Do you recall?
Well, the ground was chewed to hell anyhow from what had gone on before we got in there. It was chewed everywhere. But we had no kick with that. We were all lousy as hell.
Yeah.
Unclean, unbath. Mm. It was miserable that way.
What about the supplies and the food? Was there difficulty getting supplies up for the Canadians?
Well, they always got through with those.
They always got through, eh?
Yes.
Now, would you be under British supply, I guess, is that correct?
No. Canadian supply.
Strictly Canadian supply for you?
Yes.
What about the barrages that happened in the battle with the artillery and things? How would that affect your job, communications?
Oh, well, there was, for a long time, there were death or glory lines, always. But for a long time they had just very thin copper wire with black enamel surface, and cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Person walking over it, and even stepping on it would break it at that stage of the war. Then...
Well, how would you repair that? Lay a new line completely, or could you splice?
Just go and tie it together again.
Just re-splice it, eh?
Scrape the enamel off a little bit. Awfully thin.
But you had to find the break, I guess, eh?
Well then, around that time, the artillery were getting cable, a very D3 cable. And it was, it had red, rubber covering on it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we of the infantry just love to snatch that. And we stole many a reel from their supply, because Canadians were down there. We were relieving Imperials, British.
Yes.
And any time we could grab something like that that we couldn't get from our own people, we just took it.
You just grabbed onto it, eh?
Yes.
What about the pigeons? We were talking last time that there's a bunch of pigeons, and you said you would tell me about them.
Pigeons, yes. I can't tell you much about them because we had them.
Mm-hmm.
They were located some distance away, and we had telephone communications to their location, and they were used. I was checking with the history of the Royal Canadian Corps of Signals. There I have the book, and they're not even mentioned, but definitely they were in existence at the Somme.
At the Somme you had pictures.
And heavy casualties in the birds, you know. But they got some good marks.
Now, who would the pigeons be going to, like Is this to get it right back to headquarters, or what's it for? The
pigeons
would be sent where?
They went through a course of training way, way back around Saint-Omer, British headquarters, where the Imperial General Haig, the commander-in-chief,
mm-hmm.
was. And they were trained to go from point A to point B and back again. And
now, would this be sort of a security measure to make sure that the message got through, or?
Yes. But they're doing a lot of testing all the time, because lots of the birds were killed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
At times, there's everything under the sun going down there, killing-wise, and but definitely they were in with quite a large measure of success. Mind you, their casualties were hellish, but not any more so than the casualties sustained by the infantry.
Mm-hmm. Better to kill a few pigeons, I guess, eh?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about communications? Now, we're talking 1916. You're not using any telegraph too much. It's mostly telephone now. Is that correct?
You know, wait a minute.
No, I'm getting ahead here.
Our strength of 40-odd, we had nothing to do with behind us.
Mm-hmm.
The brigade and the infantry didn't have signalers of their own to any extent.
Right.
They had runners. They did not have signal officers. The brigade signal officer used his own 40 men to maintain 24 hours touch day and night. And that meant keeping the lines going. You had your linemen.
Yeah, but these lines, though, was it strictly telephone now? Or were you still using telegraph? Do you recall, sir?
At that time, we were using this rubber-covered artillery signals
cable.
That we had swiped. You couldn't requisition it and get it.
Mm-hmm.
Although they were having no trouble and we had no remorse at acquiring some.
Well, what would be hooked up to the cable?
Pardon me?
What would be hooked up to the cable? What type of equipment? Do you recall?
A D3. Little portable station. Little portable instrument. And hold it to your ear, and you could speak to the thing, or you could use a Morse code.
You could use a Morse code on a button, so you had a choice.
Yes.
How clear was the voice? Very clear when you spoke on it, or was it very tinny?
Yes, pretty good, yes. But we were all qualified telegraphers.
Yes, of course.
We could fall back on that.
So, let me get this right. There were pigeons, there was telegraph, there was telephone. You didn't use heliograph, and you didn't use flags much. Is that correct?
That is correct. Oh, yes. We used, at the Somme, Garnet Hughes, our brigadier.
Mm-hmm.
Came along to me, and he said, there's a good safe point. He said, I want you to send a message to a battalion and relay it. And relay it, say, to the 2nd Battalion. And
they pass it on down.
Pass it on by telephone.
I see.
To battalion right in the line, or a company in the line adjacent to where it goes. So I remember we did that, and the general got quite a kick out of it.
That would be with what, flags? Semaphore? Or?
Not semaphore. No, we used Morse.
So the Morse flag back and forth,
yeah.
Is that right?
Eddie Humpty, A, B, so on and so forth.
How would that work? Like you'd have a flag and then...
Yes.
Was it on a sort of a machinery type thing that you could click it, or?
Oh,
you just picked both hands up with the flag and waved it
around?
Just
as I was taught in Winnipeg in the militia, and I went to the camps and on the plains of Manitoba there.
Shiloh Camp.
Near Shiloh.
Mm-hmm.
They know days was Camp Hughes, called after
mm-hmm. Colonel
the
Hughes.
General. Oh, yes.
Well, what were the... Now, you were awarded the Military Cross on the Somme, is that correct, sir?
Yes.
And what was it awarded for? What was the... do you recall any specific action or just general...
Well, somewhere...
The citation.
Where is that cited? I don't know. Yes. There's the citation. I just got it from somebody in Ottawa. It
says to Lieutenant McMurray, for conspicuous gallantry in action, you maintained communications with the front line during our successful attack and the subsequent enemy bombardment. He was under heavy fire, and when most of his linemen had become casualties, he personally maintained the lines with total disregard of his own safety. And this is the Military Cross, and that would be awarded on the 14th of November 1916, is that correct, sir?
Well then...
I've got a date here, 14th November 1916.
The date of the Gazette was the 11th of the 9th.
Oh, we have different dates here. What date is yours, sir?
Oh, there it is there. That's got to be right.
Well, the MC would be the 11th of the 9th month of 1916.
Yes.
That was on the Somme. There's the Military Cross. And you were also in your OBE came in 1919.
Yes, I was in the Army of Occupation in Germany at that
mm-hmm.
time.
And you were mentioned in dispatches?
Yeah.
And I see that. It's listed, mentioned in dispatches, and you received your efficiency decoration in 1945. Well, on the Somme, getting to the Military Cross episode here, it seems that you were in some heavy fighting. Do you recall that at all, sir? This heavy fighting that they mention in the citation? Do you have any recollection of that?
Oh. It was grim. We had to do an awful lot of crawling there because the bastards would, they were on higher ground than we were.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to go out there. I will show you here. There's a typical scene. There's a signaler. He's been out, he's located his trouble, he's fixed it, and the sniper's got him.
Out in no man's land, eh? Hmm.
See that?
The armband for
arm
a signal.
Armband.
I gather a lot, there were heavy casualties in the signals, is that correct, sir?
Oh yes. Yes, we had. Quite heavy casualties.
Would you spend much time shooting back, or was it you were just overwhelmed with other things? Because you mentioned before that a signaler was a soldier first.
Right.
Now, is this apply when, as a lieutenant, would this apply as well? That you would be fighting first and then messages later, or what?
Well, don't forget, you're not in the front line where you can shoot back. You're out in front of that front line sometimes, and you're the rest of the time between battalion headquarters and company headquarters. You're more or less alone. You go in twos.
Mm-hmm.
And
would you have a motorcycle at your disposal then?
No. The division supplied us with two motorcycles and two riders. They were known as dispatch riders.
Mm-hmm.
Their job was to carry dispatches where required.
Mm.
From brigade to division.
Oh, I see.
And then my 40 men included a number of men with bicycles, and their job was to, where they could, using those bicycles, get up to the battalions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then the battalions, of course, they had they supplied me with so many runners. I had two runners per battalion while the battalions were in the line.
And you would utilize these runners, I gather.
Yes.
Quite readily.
Oh, yes.
You were saying that when you went out, though, you were ahead of the head of the line. You were the first guy, almost. I don't understand that part with the signals. You would be the number one guy. You'd be the first one in front of the battle line. I don't see how that fits.
Well, I made it a point. I have communication to the front line, and I'm going to extend that. Now we take as a case in point the Battle of Vimy Ridge. At 4 o'clock in the morning, I was in the front line, ready to go over with them when they went across.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had men waiting with equipment to follow, to laying the line, and I staked the line with bayonets taken from the dead, our own dead.
And that's how you would stake the line?
Yes.
Well, how did you feel about that? Did it bother you?
It was just a job.
Just a job, eh? All the dead bodies laying around didn't upset you too much?
There was more. Let's face it. The bodies were not all dead. There's a number terribly wounded, including Germans.
Mm-hmm.
We were happier when the people who were there were Germans.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Back on the Military Cross again, though. It was saying on the Somme itself, it mentions here that there was heavy enemy attack and bombardment, and that most of your linemen had become casualties, and yet you still maintained all the lines and were thus awarded the Military Cross. Do you remember that incident at all?
I hadn't got a single man left. The brigadier, he had him dispatched to go, and I took it.
And so what, you took this dispatch to go where, do you recall?
To the battalion commander.
To the battalion commander. So you couldn't send it, you actually had to take it yourself.
No, wait a minute. They don't know. The general, he has something that he wants to once delivered.
Mm-hmm.
All right, the signal are delivered. Well, my men are either casualties or they're out repairing lines, and I'm the only one that's there. I've come in. And so I go then with this message and take it through.
Hmm. How did you feel when you got your MC? Did you feel very proud, or did you get to wear the ribbon right away, or what was the deal there?
Well, you, I got it.
Was it awarded at the front, or?
No, I had to go to Buckingham Palace.
So you got leave after you won the MC, sir? Or?
No, on my first leave.
On your first leave?
Yes, after the appearance of it. I got it in November from the King.
I see, that's why this one has November. So you were on leave on November 1916?
Yes. Canadian headquarters. You had to report there, and when you're booking, they say, "Oh, you haven't got your military cross." Well, just a minute, and I go around, call somebody, and tell you, report at Buckingham Palace day after tomorrow or whatever. And I went with a bunch of seven or eight others, mostly Imperials, and I got it from the King.
Maybe King George the Fifth.
Yes.
Did he have anything to say to you as a Canadian at all, or?
Oh yes, I've forgotten, really. I remember there was a great big Australian ahead of me. And he was about a foot higher than I was, and King George is exactly the same height as me. So the King passed some remark after he'd pinned the medal on him. The King looked at him and he said to me, "My, he's tall, isn't he?"
What was it like at the palace in 1916? Very posh, very proper, and do you recall?
Oh, there was
they have the guard out front and everything?
Oh yes.
How did it feel to be going inside? I guess very, very proud.
Well, of course you're met. You're met. And when you're in the palace, there's secretaries and things like that, and extra military staff, you know, at the palace with the war on.
Yes, of course.
So it would be somebody would escort you from the time you enter the door until you leave at the door.
We've got a very proud moment, though, as a
yes.
person. Well, you're on leave. Battle of the Somme is a little behind you. We're talking the very end of 1916, but we have 1917 coming up. So were you promoted then in 17 to captain? Because I see you were promoted to captain quite soon.
Right. On the 10th of May, 1917, I was promoted captain, acting OC of the 5th Canadian Divisional Signal Company, then in England, preparing to go to France.
So what, you stayed in England then for the first half of 17, or did you go back right back to France? I haven't got my dates correct here.
Well, I am in England from the 10th of the 5th to the 24th of the 11th, training my divisional signal company.
Oh, I see. But that's in May. I'm thinking after you got your MC in 16, you went back to France. Is that correct?
Oh, yes.
And where would you go then? Would you be back with the same 1st Canadian Division again, or do you recall?
I was moved around. I was moved around like so.
I see.
I got the Military Cross when I was in the 1st Infantry Brigade. Now, I went to the 2nd Brigade because Norton was killed.
Ah, yes.
You see? And then back to the 1st Brigade again. And then this fellow here, Underhill, he was wounded, and I'm the shuttle. I go there.
You sort of filled the gaps when they needed someone, eh?
So, one death and one wound.
So you would be traveling. Well, what was it like training these new Canadian signalers in 1917? What was that like? What kind of things would you train?
Oh, just a repeat of what was happening out to ourselves when we went over in 1914. You're just putting them through all the lessons. And in my case, I'd been in France all of this time, so that the officers were no help. They were all pretty decent fellows, but they didn't know what it was all about.
They weren't overseas.
And then I was pretty fed up hanging around and putting these fellows through. And then one day, I got a call to go to division headquarters. I saw Major General Hughes, the commanding officer, and he said, stay right there, Major Ford is in London, and he wants to talk to you. So we got...